You're listening to Red Compass After Hours, the podcast where the best and brightest of the financial services industry let their hair down, unbutton their collars, and share what they really think about payments. I'm Mike Truter, Director of Digital Ecosystems and Innovation at Red Compass, and in each episode, I'm joined by my friend and colleague, Julie Getter. Let's kick things off. Today, we have the pleasure of welcoming someone who really impresses us from the financial services industry, FinTech founder and advisor, Adam Olson. Adam describes himself on his LinkedIn profile as a product-focused payments and technology executive with wide experience in the design and rollout of digital payment products such as payment processing platforms, including real-time payment applications and payment processing networks.
To delve into a fascinating payments topic, to add a bit of spice and spontaneity, we, Julie and I, don't yet know what the topic is. Instead, we're going to ask Adam to select one from a huge list of topics, and then without any script or preparation, we'll see where the conversation takes us. There's only one rule, like the Scottish knife, the small Scottish knife, the skin do, is that we have to be short, sharp, and to the point. So those are the rules. Guys, are you ready?
Yeah.
Ready.
Okay, maybe before we get down to business, we've got a first order of business. So let's make sure everyone has a suitable refreshment. Adam, thank you so much for joining us after hours. It's always a pleasure to share a drink with a fellow payment enthusiast. May I ask what tipple, virtual or otherwise, you have chosen to wet your whistle this evening?
I'm going to start with water and I'm going to finish with whiskey.
Awesome. Choice. I'm being a bit jealous. I'm on Pepsi Max. It's not quite the same. I'll make sure I upgrade for next time. Julie, I'm assuming you have a glass of French wine on her?
Not today, unfortunately. Just water on my side as well.
We're letting the side down here. Adam, you're setting a good example. For
I'll get two more and have them for you.
Thank you. Okay, Adam, I'm really eager to hear which topic you will choose. But maybe before we get to that, could I ask you to share a little bit with the audience about yourself?
Sure. I've been in banking, payments and technology for about 25 years. Had a number of roles for technology companies, worked in a number of countries in the US, France, Belgium, all across Europe. Had just over 10, 11 years at Swift. And in my latest sort of adventure, left corporate land and did a payment startup called Form3. And I was part of the founding team there and set that company up 5 years ago. And recently left that organization as part of a successful exit and now doing fintech advisory for a bunch of startups.
Sounds really exciting. I'm hoping we can cover a little bit more of that as we kind of talk through the topic. And getting to that point, maybe I can share our list of topics and ask you to enlighten us with which one you've chosen for today.
Okay, so the topic I would like to focus on, or at least start with, I guess is centered around open banking. Yes, and you could say there's been a lot of conversation about this in the industry for the last 2 or 3 years. The reason I've chose it is that I think the opportunity and the maturity of the technology has changed quite a bit, even in the last few months. And I think we're going to see much more concrete use cases at scale in market, which I'm interested in how that will disrupt current payment methods, particularly cards. But I'll leave it at that. That's what I'd like to talk about.
Oh, especially the disruption of cards. That's one Julie and I talk about a lot because Julie, do you want to share your thoughts on where you think we're going with this?
Yeah, no, definitely. Like, I agree with you, Adam, like when you say that open banking has lots of opportunity to do disrupt cards and the card business. I think that's why like Visa and MasterCard are investing heavily on this front as well, trying to prepare the platform of the future. Funnily enough, a few weeks ago, I had actually an argument with my husband about open banking. He's not working in payment at all. He's a software engineer, but we watched The Social Dilemma. And he started to say, hey, is isn't open banking the same as Facebook when it comes to the management of data? And it didn't end well, effectively. We start both being French. We started to argue about this because, for me, his point was, is the customer aware through open banking of the amount of data he's sharing and what are the consequences, effectively? And is the customer more aware than Facebook when all of a sudden we are the product because Facebook is collecting all this data about ourselves and selling this to a third party? So he was arguing that open banking was doing the same in banking industry. In fact, how you thought about this?
It's interesting, isn't it? That definitely some people do focus on sort of the use of their data. I think some people get very passionate about that topic. I'm not one of them.
Yeah.
I'm not one of them. I think companies have had access to personal data for a very long time. And most companies have done very little with it to actually help customers. I think banks definitely are in that category. They, not done anything particularly useful with customer information, unless they're trying to sell a product. And that's pretty unfortunate that the only time you have any real interaction is when there's a customer, you initiate a conversation with the bank and see if the answer's a yes or a no. And if it's a yes, you kind of get told what the terms are. And for me, that's a bit unfortunate, because a lot of the time, customers, whether they're consumers or corporates, could benefit from advice and guidance and support from specialists. And rather, it would be better not to have to give the data at a time when you think you need something. Rather, a specialist could kind of tap you on the shoulder and say, you know what, I think if you did this or if you tried that, then your business might be better off. So that's my view. I think there's others that can help customers better than the incumbents that hold the data today.
I guess you're creating opportunities, right, for people to be innovative, which I think is the whole point of open banking at the end of the day, is to enable innovation and bring new ideas, exciting new ideas that really help the customer at the center of the bubble, right? That's kind of where we are today, looking at product journeys, but customer journeys.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wish you two were in my living room this day, really. felt less alone. Yeah, I think for me, and I definitely agree with your point, Adam, that if banks would have wanted to do something dodgy with the data, they would have done it before, effectively. We've been talking about digital identity for years and years and years, and I remember David Birch already talking about this, in 2013, 2014, going around and telling banks, hey, go and sell the data, go and sell the data. It didn't happen. And I think one of the reasons is trust. Trust is still a major factor in the industry, effectively. And if you want to be successful on launching a product, remain competitive, you need to keep the customer trust, in opinion. And for this, effectively, you need to do something meaningful with the data. I think that's one of the points. And the other point is around the regulation framework, particularly in Europe, is quite strong, right? People are not allowed to do whatever they do, so whatever they want. So effectively, I do agree with you too when you say, for me, open banking is definitely bringing lots of opportunities, challenging the card, so better for the merchants, better for us as final customer too. That being said, in fact, Mike and I just tested the open banking solution really recently. And even for us, people in the payment industry, it's a bit that needs to be changed effectively around
still too much friction, right?
Yes.
A little bit too much friction.
Yeah. Yeah. I think my view is that banks and large institutions that we all have accounts with today do a really good job at keeping our money safe and a really good job at I would say following the regulation and keeping their own businesses going. I mean, that in itself is quite a major thing, right? And they service our accounts, they hold our money, they service our accounts. And just that in itself is a huge valuable thing. But it's like a foundation that then the rest of the industry and the rest of the economy needs to be built on. And up until open banking, there was no way to build on this foundation. It just wasn't there. You couldn't get to it. And so my view is some of the open banking players that have started to really grow and mature today and get decent funding, they will create the possibility for other organizations to build foundations off this account servicing layer that exists in banks.
Standing on the shoulders of giants, right?
That's
important.
Yeah.
Just a question. I mean, I worked in Singapore for a number of years, and you know, the approach to open banking is not regulatory driven, but kind of up to the banks to compete with each other. You know, in terms of meeting customer expectations, I guess that I said. Do you think the way it's been done in Europe is kind of superior or more standardized than what you see in other parts of the world where it's not regulation led?
I think it's more efficient. I mean, if you've got regional standards and requirements and timetables to work to open up customer data, even if functionally it's very limited what you can do, then it's a common basis to build on. So that means that all of the companies that are then building capability on top, it's just less work for them to do. So
and
less
you get a level playing field, I guess, as well, right?
What's that, sorry?
You get a level playing field as well, where
you're
competing at the same level. Whereas, I guess
just more efficient. Like in the US today, it's not like that. So, you know, Plaid is a good example of a company that's growing very quickly, but they've integrated to hundreds and hundreds of financial institutions. But how do we know how they have done that, and how easy is it for another player to come in market and have competition effectively with them? It might be impossible already because of their scale. That's not good. I mean, the degree of competition at these different sort of platform level services, that's good for everybody. So yeah, if it's not driven through kind of standards and standard timetables and minimum requirements that regulators can set, then that's just not great, I think.
And how would you say the kind of ecosystem in Europe is that's kind of built around open banking now? What level of maturity do you think it's at? Your thoughts on what's next? What are we going to see that killer application that might really kind of make it, you know, stick in everyone's mind that this is something that has changed the world?
Yeah. I think... Perhaps the last couple of years, the companies that have scaled and we see in the press that have raised money and doing really well, like Tink and TrueLayer and Plaid and people like that, you know, they've been building infrastructure, they're building rails. It's not sexy, but it has to be done. It is their foundation for their business. And at the same time, they've been establishing the first kind of version of their business models. How are they going to make money from accessing data? And they've gone to market with those things, but I think their business models are going to evolve very, very quickly because, you know, charging somebody to initiate a payment, I mean, it's kind of a little bit, I mean, ideally it should be free, right? I mean, it really should be or as close to free as possible because you want as much payment, you know, as much movement as possible, as much use as possible, because then you can add more value as a service provider in the middle. You don't really want to have to charge 20p a transaction or something like that. The same as getting access to a balance on an account. You don't really, I mean, you'd rather not have to charge because then it's going to limit all the use cases. So I think what's going to happen is the use cases and the commercial models of those companies are going to change dramatically in the next months, certainly the next year or two.
For sure, right. And especially with like all the industry moving from open banking to open finance, right? It will create yet again more opportunities, I think. And for me, you you will also start to see like ecosystem going beyond banking industries, where effectively these guys, the infrastructure guys using the open banking capability, will be a technology enabler for other parties over, like very successful other parties for other industry coming along and providing like banking services.
Julie, when you say infrastructure guys, do you mean big techs?
No, not necessarily. Like, I mean, I don't consider Tink as a big tech yet. but yeah, I mean, like, big tech could be an option, but even like with some of the actors that Adam mentioned, I think I agree, like, they were first seizing the opportunity of open banking, building from the start rails, be well positioned. They're still acquiring, like, effectively other companies that complement their services to really build like a full proposition for company to come that know nothing about like banking as such, but think that they can provide better services. So
yeah, I think essentially these companies that are leading in this space and making it possible for other organizations to embed financial services within day-to-day business.
Yeah.
I mean, financial services needs to be like invisible and just a part of doing business, a part of living life, you know. So that could be I don't know, Mercedes having a very different way of delivering service to their customer base. It could be energy companies having a very different way of delivering service to their customer base. And it's not, I think it's just making the ability to move money as easy and simple and safe as possible. And just this widget that you can just plug into, as opposed to, you know, go work with a bank, go select some technology, integrate some technology, get it all working, test it all. I mean, that's just so alien. In a few years, that's just going to look ridiculous.
You know, it's just more like, and 3 years later or 5 years later, you have
it
some.
It might work.
Yeah,
it might work. And it's cost, you know, X million for what? There are companies already that's why Form 3 was created, is to abstract away from all of the technicalities and differences that financial institutions have to deal with, and just present an API and go, you know what, it's the same. You want to make a payment, you just integrate to this API and you can move money.
Effectively create the standards for the industry, right? So that people can just plug and play, literally.
Yeah, literally plug and play. And if you don't want to move money, if actually what you want is a financial product, then the product should be plug and play. And if you don't want a product, but you want a suite of products, then the suite of products should be plug and play. And these are just different levels of abstraction away from the nitty gritty that I think all of us in payments for the last 20 years have had to learn, like how it all works. But people won't have to know all that stuff in the future. Even now, you don't have to know. You don't have to know about ISO 20022 and that, you know, all this stuff.
Well, as a consumer, you shouldn't care, right? And I liked your point about it being invisible. At the end of the day, you want to do whatever it is you want to do. You don't care about how it gets done under the covers, as long as you said it's safe and secure and easy.
Yeah, a great example. I took a taxi before lockdown, and I said when I booked the taxi, just make sure I can take a card. And when the guy turned up, we set off, and I said, oh, you can take card, can't you? He went, no, they didn't say that you needed a card. I said, well, I don't have any cash. He said, well, call the office now while you're in the car, give them your card number. He said, but they're going to charge me 5% of the fare. I said, well, why don't you just tell me your telephone number and I'll send you the money now? And he was like, I'm not giving you my phone number. I said, okay, well, why don't you give me your bank account number and I'll just send you the money and you'll have the money in your account by the time we get to my house, and then you don't have to lose 5% of the fare. Not that it was a big fare. This guy thought I was he thought I was a con man. He was like, why? You're not having my bank account number. Yet he would give up 5% of his earnings to a company because they have a card terminal sat in an office somewhere. It's crazy.
But it's a company he trusts, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what he knows and understands.
Yeah.
Maybe that brave new world is still a brave new world, and perhaps that's the biggest barrier we face, is getting people to really understand it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think we are close to time. I wondered if we could share some final thoughts. Julie, maybe from you first.
Yeah, I think I'm still waiting for the killer use cases in open banking, to be fair. Payment initiation is one of them, but like we discussed earlier, I think there are still some frictions that needs to be removed. And the things that are quite popular at the moment, like account aggregation and so on, we need to go to the next layer, right? So definitely I agree with you. Lots of great things from the infrastructure perspective, which I'm quite not so happy being in the industry. But from a consumer perspective, I'm still waiting for the killer use case.
The prediction I would make is that the use case is there already. And it's at the point of sale, buying something, you will not pay with your card. And the first merchant that you go to that doesn't do that, they will reward you either with cash, like you will be rewarded for not using your card, or you will get a free product of some kind. You will get some loyalty product of some kind.
And you know what, just to be able to go to a shop again, I'm wishing that it's going to be the one happening.
Or maybe it'll be an online experience, but it will be at the point, at the checkout, you will not be using a card and you won't use PayPal and you won't use any of these things. You will use something different.
Adam, I can't wait for that time. That's the thing I missed most from living in Singapore, the fact that I used to use my Grab wallet and go into anything, scan a QR code and pay.
Yeah.
It was just so simple. And I have not understood why that concept has not taken off yet in Europe. Because I think if we can get something close to that, I think people's lives will honestly be transformed.
Yeah. Check out a little startup called Trillo.io. They're doing exactly
the top tip.
Top tip
today.
Here we go. Our guest is giving us some homework now.
Thank you, Adam, for joining us today, for joining us after hours. It's been a pleasure talking to someone who's equally passionate about payments. I get my normal daily dose from Julie, but they say variety is the spice of life. So thank you for enriching our conversation today. And I'm looking forward to looking up Trillo.io.
Thanks for listening to Red Compass After Hours. Visit redcompass.com and explore our numerous articles on the future of payments, financial crime, data-led analytics, and much more. That's all for this episode. See you next time.